Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Buzz! 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 Buzz!
Welcome in to At the Buzzer, official name, I believe, continuing on. And we are the Ralphie,
Total Ralphie Radio
podcast. What is it?
No, Total Ralphie Radio.
Total Ralphie Radio podcast. Still the same two idiots that don't know the name of the show. we still talk about Colorado Athletics, which has had quite a week. And we are going to talk about all parts of that week. And when you might be asking yourself, when you say we, who do you mean? What do you mean? And it's the same two that I always mean. One co-host is me, Jack. Hello. The other co-host is Sam over there. Hello. Hello.
Yeah, and hopefully we will. This is the new era of our podcast.
Yeah.
We had a first era where we tried and we were excited about it, and we had guests. We had
Jeremy Bloom. Never forget. Shout out Jeremy Bloom.
The second podcast, which I attribute myself a lot of the blame.
That middle was wall the kind area. Of, yeah.
The little dead eyed period.
Well, we can blame Carl Durrell for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think we will. hopefully this is our third.
Yeah, for SEO purposes, we're calling this the Coach Prime era of the podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because apparently downloads are what matters now instead of a flat rate per month. So please, I think we're on Spotify. Please share.
We're on Spotify.
Rate 5 stars. This is literally the first time we've ever said this on the fucking pod.
We're on
you
everything.
Can rate and review. And leave us a 3.5-star comment if you can.
Hey, good news. All press is good press, man. Give us 1 star. Give us all of it.
Yeah.
Just don't. Actually, don't. Don't do that. I'm kidding. Unless you think we deserve it. If you think we deserve it, then give us 1 star. We're getting some more insight into our numbers and stuff. Anyways, we're excited. We're excited to do all this. We're glad that we can continue to do this. We have always said we do this for fun and nothing else, and we hope that lack of work ethic shows through in our work. And I think it will continue to do so. It's we only do it because I'm already doing this to friends, and I figured why not put a mic in front of me. By this I mean talking about CU sports, and we have a few to go through. I guess let's start with what might take up the meaty portion of our podcast schedule here. Earlier this week, the University of Colorado men's basketball team on Sunday played the Utah Valley Thunderbirds at Coors Event Center, who knocked off a feisty New Mexico team. And they came into Boulder and ended CU's season 81-69. Nice was the final score, I believe. And that officially ends the 2022-23 Colorado Buff season. We've post-mortemed our way through the latter half once we figured out we weren't an NCAA tournament team. But now that the game, the whole thing is officially done and dusted, we can more officially break out our reports and stats and thoughts and blah, blah, blah about where we are and where we're going. Let me just start with that specific game. You know, a lot of thoughts going around there. Skeleton Crew, of course, for CU. I'll say two things, and I'll start with one before I kick it off to Sam. Trey Woodbury might be my favorite player of all time for Utah Valley. He is the cool. That was incredible. I didn't realize he didn't play until March for this year. He literally didn't play until March. Yeah, let me show you his game plays. Wait, is Utah Valley the Wolverines now? Oh my God, I'm sorry. They're the Wolverines. I'm already an idiot. Yeah, Trey Woodbury this year. Oh no, he played all games this year. It was last year he came in March.
Yeah.
Fifth year senior though. That was a dude who just knew what he had it. He knew he had it, and I love him. I love him so much.
He could be a sixth year senior, depending on what he tries to do with that. Those two games played last year. He could probably go for a medical red shirt. Maybe he's a transfer target for us.
Oh God, I hope so. Yeah, that would be, I mean, 25 boards, 25 points, 7 boards, 7 assists, 3 for 4 from 3, 8 from 11 from 2, 11 to 15 overall for a 73% field goal percentage. He's making
all kinds of bullshit too on Tristan guarding him closely, cooking Hammond and Neek.
He made every right decision every time. When he dumped it off, it was the perfect time to dump it off. When he shot his weird banks, it was the perfect time to shoot his. He just knew he had it. And I'll be honest, see you without KJ Simpson, with a iffy Jalen Gabadon, and with Ethan Wright playing 39 minutes, is not going to do it against a guy like that. It's just not. Okay, so.
You don't bait me yet with the Ethan Wright thing. This team, Utah Valley, who apparently we are going to talk about more than the Buffs, because they would finish. I think that they would finish like third in the Pac-12.
They were pretty good. I liked the big guy too, Aziz. Bendogo. And the other guard they had, Justin Harmon, also pretty good. 18 points, 63% from the field. They could not miss, man. Their team as a whole shot 57%.
Yeah, I didn't realize they beat Oregon on the road earlier this year too.
Yeah, man.
I mean, this was when Oregon was having like a death spiral.
Yeah.
But still. They are a very good team. Like, they just play so cohesively. Yes, 39 minutes for Ethan Wright. Who would have thought that before the end of the season?
Yeah.
Those were 39 good minutes, I will say. Ethan Wright. This is how we're kicking off the postmortem. Ethan Wright is exactly what we needed him to be at the end of the year. That's exactly the type of player we were missing.
Hits like 30 open games shots.
Hey man, he showed up. That's more than some players can really say. He hits open shots, he makes the right pass, he has just enough off the bounce verve to kind of make things happen. I was really happy with how he played. At the end of the year, 14 points, 4 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 43% on 6 threes per game. That's really good. Really good. That's the role player we thought we were getting. That's better than the role player we thought we were getting. And I wish we had that all year.
I mean, more than just making shots, we needed someone from the wing for 30 goddamn games that would take a shot. Like, Gavon Ruffin was the one guy who would take a shot for most of the regular season who wasn't KJ Simpson.
Or like make a quick decision with the ball.
Right. And Wright was ready to shoot in these last few games when he caught the ball, which is like such a small, stupid thing. But tell you what, most people who took those minutes most of this year were not ready to shoot the ball and look at the basket.
Quincy Allen was, but that was all he was ready to do.
Yeah. did it go in? No. Often it careened off the backboard in insane fashion. But Ethan Wright 39 minutes, Tristan De Silva 38 minutes. This leads us to the other thing I want to talk about. We are heavy loss and lovering defenders, and I'm so glad for him that this game against the WAC Defensive Player of the Year, it's not like it's Aziz Bendogo is nothing. Lawson Lovering goes for 21 points, and not just on dunks. 21 points on legit interior scoring. A little push shot, a little hook action, a little post up, little passes. He showed a lot.
He looked happy.
Well, he looks angry a lot, which is good. I think CU needs people that play angry. But he definitely also looked, ecstatic when on the offensive side of the ball and not mad at himself, which is usually what we see. Catching balls, he's getting better at catching those passes. And I think maybe this is also too nice to him, but I think he did a good job on the defensive side of the ball as well. Like we just said, Aziz Bandogo is not a nothing. He is a good player. And he did okay, ended up with 12 points, 7 boards, but not everything he generally is this year. That's under a little bit under his season average this year, definitely under his average for boards. I don't know. I thought he did well on both sides, and I'm happy that we can look at that and build on that for next year with hopefully we can build on that next year for Lawson. Leading scorer for CU, who would have guessed?
Yeah. What was the starting lineup? Ethan Wright was starting.
Ethan Wright,
Julian Hammond,
Silva, O'Brien, Lovering, Nick Clifford.
Oh my God.
Nick Clifford is point guard.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. How'd that go?
Hey,
the offense was fine.
I mean, Lovering bailed them the hell out in the first half, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean.
Yeah. I don't know. Hammond was not good this game and might have been hurt or something. I don't know why he's on the bench. But, oh boy, CU's guard play was just terrible.
Are we getting into the nitty-gritty? Because I have stats ready, too, on any of these players you're mentioning.
Yeah, I guess
specifically one.
Let's move past this game and start talking about this season as a whole. I believe CU finished this season 18-17, so still a winning record, of course.
Not to 20. Tough.
Yeah, not quite 20 wins. We are all eyes on the future. I guess I'll kick this off by saying what Tab Boyle said in his post-game press conference, which was a lot. Very complimentary of Utah Valley. Said a few things that I thought stood out. Number one, he said what I was thinking watching this, which was, look, this game is pretty simple. They had a guy named Trey Woodbury, and we didn't. And, you know, I think that is a ominous sign for guards currently on the roster as Tab Boyle goes through his one-on-one meetings that generally are the off-season coal or when the off-season coal starts under Tab Boyle is on those one-on-one meetings where he's very honest with what he sees their role as next year. Some other things he said a lot of work to do. This team just wasn't tough enough and we didn't think it was disappointing. He said the only guy on the team with a defensive mentality consistently was Lawson Lovering, and that's not good enough. So a few different things to be said there. That last bit I thought was really interesting as we look at potential personnel moves as well, because there may be some players that we thought may be kept due to their defensive prowess. But if Tab Boyle doesn't see it, then maybe not. So, he's also looking towards next season in the offseason. It sounds like he's expecting some movement and maybe pushing for some movement potentially, which we've seen him do before when he's not happy, especially with guards. So I thought that was an interesting offseason. I don't think he thinks these kids are bad kids or anything. Of course not. But I do think he's upset with the mentality of the team.
Yeah, I mean, also like just the general consistency and the effort that you want. Like the way he coaches, you have to put in the work to get better throughout the year. You have to show up every day to get better. Or it's like no one's gonna get babied, I guess. I don't know how to say it. But
here's the success stories, right? George King looked awful as a freshman. He was bad enough where Tab Boyle said, you will not play this next year. So you can either redshirt here and we want to develop you because we think you have potential, or you can leave. But you will not play, right? George King took the redshirt year and did what you're talking about of not being babied. You are expected to work past what Tab Boyle tells you to do if you want to do what other people have. George King did that. Sophomore year becomes a Pac-12 breakout player, sixth man of the year, scorer of the year, blah, blah, blah. We go to the tournament because of that, right? Spencer Dinwiddie, similar thing. Derek White, similar thing. Especially on the guards, you need to do more, but if you do, you can do whatever you want. You will get to the NBA. It's pretty clear-cut at this point under Tab Oil's program. And I don't think he's happy with the mentality of some of the guards and wing players when it comes to that and what they are working on and can they be the alpha and can they lock up. He talks about this all the time in every offseason. Is he wants a lead guard who accepts the challenge of guarding the other dude every time. He wants the guy who says, put me on their best dude every time. Offensively, sure, but he wants the guy who's like, I'm going to guard their best guy. That's why I like Eli Parquet so much. That's why I love Eli Parquet, right? Because that was Parquet every
time. I love Eli Parquet.
And that's something that CU is missing, I think. And I also think Ted Boyle is also thinking.
Okay, so yes, in that Utah Valley game, I was thinking, I don't know why it hasn't hit me yet this year. I think I've noticed it, but it didn't really like come to fruition. We are not very physical. We're not very strong. Like, no one on this team is physically imposing. Except Luke O'Brien in a way. Like, he's literally the only plus athlete on the team.
I don't agree with that. I think Hadley was intimidating.
No.
I mean, do you have a Pac-12 example? UCLA doesn't count of a team that isn't intimidating physically? Are you going to say Oregon? Because I disagree.
No. I wasn't thinking of Oregon. I'm thinking of, like, ASU usually has these guys who are just kind of, like, up in your face and like literally just strong. I'm thinking
what? Who the hell are you talking about? Lou Dort?
Wait, I was thinking Lou Dort in my head.
That's
I was
one also thinking, guy, man.
Hang on.
Who is tiny?
Who is the guy? I'm gonna have to look at the roster. I know there was that guy named Shaq something who just destroyed us one year. That was who I was thinking of. Lou Dort and him.
Shaq Richardson, UW football two-way player that rushed for two touchdowns.
No. There was a player on Arizona State League 2017 who I didn't mean to think about. I guess Devin Cambridge isn't that big.
Okay, so when you say no one on the team is intimidating, you've had two players in the span of 6 years on ASU.
No. Hang on. I didn't mean that. I also didn't mean intimidating. I meant more just like.
Do you have prior CU examples that might be easier? Like,
Parquet,
yeah.
George King being literally just strong basketball players, like
yes.
Where they drive and saying. They don't just get bumped off, or like I don't.
I mean, honestly, Junior Dinwiddie was incredibly strong. Derek White, I thought was very strong with the ball.
Oh yeah. No. Okay, so you do get what I'm saying.
McKinley Wright, incredibly strong, especially for his size.
This team is like. That I mean, I think Hadley is that, but I think Hadley, his like athleticism is limited. Like he's not a vertical athlete, so that's kind of what I was thinking of. Like hit positionally, it matters.
But I think CU still missed that when Hadley went down the stretch. Like I think Hadley was absolutely a bully, especially with Luke O'Brien out there for offensive boards. Like Luke O'Brien gets so many boards because he is that guy in the air where he's going to jump up and he's going to take the space because he's that thick or that fast. Mm-hmm. Off the top. Like that helps. And that's something that Taz is looking for. I agree. Yes. Okay. So your overall point is what? That CU's missing that physicality?
They're missing that physicality. I think that they're also missing like an explosive athlete in a way. Like KJ is quick.
I would consider him explosive, but he's not strong.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah, exactly. It would be nice to have, I don't know, someone who's strong and explosive, which we'll get, but...
Sure, I think everyone wants that, but you can also go to the tournament as a CU team without that, I think. We've seen that before. I don't know, maybe. Courtney Anderson is who you're talking about. Literally,
that's good.
Like... He is a son of a NFL linebacker who's 6'5", 220, and has a 40-inch vert. So, like, But he's a freshman.
I'm excited about that.
You know? He's a freshman. Yeah. And maybe that's R.J. Smith. I doubt it, but maybe that's R.J. Smith. I don't know.
I think no, it's definitely not Robert. I just, it jumped out at me because I was thinking like Utah Valley should not be like a noticeably more athletic team than us.
I don't know and if I would say I that they, well, they're... the team that played Utah Valley, they are more athletic than that team. Absolutely, yeah. They are. Yeah, and this shambling, rambling wreck down the stretch has been tough to watch athletically. Gabadon is probably the best. I mean, on paper,
we talked about this, I think.
But doesn't matter.
No, I mean, Nick Clifford, he doesn't really apply his athleticism into basketball.
So let's hold on. Yeah, let's
I derailed us
a bit more. Yeah. So looking at the season as a whole, like I said, we want to look at the present and past before we look at the future. So we might do this deeper into the off season with some guests who know what they're talking about more than we do. but for now, let's just talk real quick. We finished the season. Who is the player that surprised you positively, surprised you the most this year?
Yes, because the Ralphie Report is built on being positive.
You mean
and
total,
shiny.
Total Ralphie Radio.
Well, yeah, but it's still the RalphieReport.com.
That's true.
Which was built around shitty football and being like, oh, I think Tony Jones will have a good year this year. I'm stalling a little bit. Give me Luke O'Brien.
That's a great pick. I think that's a great pick.
Do you have a pick?
Yeah, I have a few. I was not expecting Javon Ruffin to do what he did, but I thought he was very good when he played. And I'm worried that he's having another knee surgery because 3 in 2 years is tough, but I loved seeing him out there.
Is he getting a knee surgery?
Yes.
Oh shit. Okay. I didn't know that.
So we can talk about this when we're talking about potential personnel for next year, but Ruffin is up there for me on the bench. I was pleasantly surprised with Hadley and how much he was featured early on. I don't think he's a 30-minute-a-guy player at the Power 5 level. And I don't think we even recruited him to be that, but just ended up happening that way because of how much of the wing was just terrible. So, like, when he did do that and you're like, well, you know, you'll take 30 minutes from that guy if that's what he does. I was very pleasantly surprised. And next year, if he slots into a more traditional, like 18 to 20 minute energy wing big guy,
yeah,
we're going to be super happy. We're going to be super happy with that output.
Yeah, because he's just a rock. Like, you know exactly what he's going to give you. He's going to be consistent.
Right. I was just having an argument with one of my friends about CU basketball, because this is what I do, I guess. I just fight with friends all the time. But, you know, you're saying that
we're
not
fighting, are we?
He was saying he wants to replace a lot of the roster with better options. He was talking about how Lovering isn't quite there. He wants to replace Lovering with someone who's ready to win now and can run the floor because he wants to play really fast next year. And you know, exactly, Sam. That face is what I was making. But past that, anyways, when you're talking about a big or an interior guy that can run the floor, there is no better option than Javon Hadley. He sprinted down the floor a few times early in the season and got easy dunks because no one cared that, you know, no one was there. So, anyways, Javon Hadley, surprising player pick.
I also like Javon. I was thinking he didn't play that much in conference play, so I kind of took him off my thoughts. But Luke O'Brien, too. I guess he didn't really play as much either until Hadley got hurt. But once he got into that starting lineup, I've talked about him a lot on here, but I'm just so happy with his effort and going so hard on the boards. That was his job. He made it work. He also pushed the ball in transition, made a lot of really nice plays. He tried to dunk the hell out of the ball on some UCLA guy, I think.
Yep.
It's just like that his energy was so essential to this team because he was the only one doing that type of stuff. And again, part of that is because the wing depth turned out not to be very good. And yeah, but I mean, I could see a starting role for him next year, especially if he gets his 3-point shot back to where it was last year, because it was a little bit cold for him.
The note I always repeat on Luke O'Brien is he was recruited as a tall shoot first point guard. which is hilarious to me every time. Because it's like,
yeah, because he's now an
energy forward. None of that worked, and he still found a way. So I love that. I love that.
Yeah. And he also is a Chad, which I think
we absolutely can all adore. Chad cries a lot of senior days. Of course, lost his mind when Batty was a senior day. But I think he's also going to lose it when Luke O'Brien graduates next year. Because that's a Tad player, right? That's your Sabatino Chen, souped up Sabatino Chen player. So, yeah.
Souped up Sab. I like that.
Yeah. Team MVP should be easy for both of us. Ready? I'm going to count down, and because of audio delay, it won't matter. 3, 2, 1. Tristan Da Silva. Yeah. Okay. Easy money. Developed to a go-to scorer. Incredible touch. Just, you know, one of those guys where he shoots a shot and you know it's going in. Developed some moves near the end of the season, I thought. Got better at passing and not turning the ball over. Started developing a post-front game, which I thought was really interesting. He did some interesting fadeaway bank stuff that might be good if he comes back next year. He is testing the NBA draft waters. I don't expect him to hear a first-round grade, which I think means he's coming back, but we'll see.
Yeah. I can say I'm reading stuff. Like, I think Sam Vecenie has him in the 70s or 80s ranked.
Yeah, that's not
the highest right. The highest I've seen him is like 61. Like, that makes sense because he's not really an NBA athlete. He's skilled. He shoots open threes really well. He has like good form and everything. He has like, he's kind of what teams want from a wing who like spots up and like they can attack a closeout.
Yeah.
But again, like that lack of athleticism, like he's a good athlete, but he's just not an NBA athlete.
Right.
Especially in terms of like lateral quickness on defense, he struggles staying in front of quicker guys. Isn't really strong or vertical enough to make up for it. He just, and this is easy because he's German, so it's like he'll have a great career in Europe.
What? Oh, okay. I thought you were gonna say
Dirk. No.
I mean, Oscar Da Silva is having a great career in Europe, so.
Yeah, he's in Barcelona.
Right, I think it's a similar thing to Oscar Da Silva, where it's just like, yeah, your athleticism is good for the college game, but it's just like the obvious half step where you're just not gonna make it.
I would though say, I think Tristan's game makes more sense in the NBA than Oscar's does.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that he's just gonna be, like maybe he'll sign a 2-way contract. Like if Jariah Horn can kind of be a fringe NBA player, I think Tristan can if he wants to be, and I think he probably does like the U.S. And being around, but he just seems like a player who's better suited for Europe.
I mean, great. First team All Pac-12 is really what you need to say there. Incredible season from him. If he comes back as a senior, expectations will be very high. I don't expect the expectation. I don't think they'll be too high, but I would love to see him when he does come back. If he does come back, work on tightening that handle a little bit. So like you mentioned, right now when he's attacking those hard closeouts, because of how good he is at shooting, he does a nice pump fake, two dribbles in, one dribble in, and then like a, you know, mid-range floater or whatever, which is nice. But I like to see him do that next step of like two quick dribbles and get the interior pass and get the post up and layup, you know, the next step of his offensive game, get a little bit better at passing. He's getting there. And then of course I'm going to turn this into a I love Lawson Lovering comment. CU's team defense this year was 29th on KenPom.
Wait, I have something to say.
No, I'm not done yet. CU's team defense was 29th on KenPom this year, right? Really high. Top 30 defense in the country is really good. That, to me, speaks to how good Lawson Loving is at team defense, because you and I both know that Tristan Da Silva is not a part of a top 30 team. Like, that is not a Tristan Da Silva number, right? I would like him to work on team defense a little bit more. I think he's semi-competent now. I think he can do okay one-on-one every once in a while. But, yeah, get a little more active, you know, a little more Wesley Gordon in you, and you should be good.
I was also going to say that we were top 20 defensively before the USC game, where they just shot the lights out and crushed us.
Yeah.
So we were better most of the season. The Tristan thing I was going to say is that I actually like that little one or two dribbles in and then do that little mid-range thing. And I think it's because we've kind of switched a little bit. And like I have the pace and space NBA viewing of basketball.
Yeah.
Where I like layups and threes. And I think that I've circled around and I just love the aesthetic of a clean mid-range jumper.
Yeah, how upsetting like this is to me right now. I'm glad you're going on your own journey, but it's just upsetting.
No.
I do evangelize and
I think I was a little extreme when I was like maybe 18, 19 and kind of learning more about basketball. But since then I have learned that if you're good at mid ranges, it's an efficient shot. If you're bad at mid ranges, don't take them. That's what analytics is.
Right. And DeSilva's good at that. But I also think that it's more beneficial. He gets stuck there sometimes and then he has to pass back out and like, have a little bit more confidence because he's so good at those weird finishes around the rim. And like, you're not going to draw fouls doing a little floater, a little jump shot 2 feet in, right? Like, you can get and ones. He got like 3 and ones in a row against Utah Valley. Get those and ones with those finishes because you can do it. And maybe that's a strength thing. I don't know. But yeah.
I'm trying to find his draw foul, right? So talk your shit, whatever you want to say.
Let's move on. Most disappointing loss in moment. Or moment, I'll go first. There's a few options here. This team was extremely up and down. I think I'd have to go with the Cal loss on the road. That's just inexcusable this year. Like it really was. You can't lose the Cal this year. You can't. You just can't.
They finished what 3-29 or something.
Yeah, Cal is impossibly bad, and CU has lost there when they've been bad before, but they've never been this bad. And they just gross.
They were 3-29 on the season, but they were 3-1 in that 4-game stretch where they beat CU. Think about that.
I won't. I guess I will when I'm thinking about how disgusting it is that CU lost this game. CU should not have lost that game. Ugh. That was horrendous. There are some other options here, but that's the one I'm picking.
Tristan's foul drawn rate is pretty bad.
Yeah,
it's lower than Hammond's by a bit, lower than Simpson by a bit. That's pretty. Like, if you're big, you should be drawing more fouls.
Right, and he can. He like we both mentioned, he can get those shots up. So I don't know. I would like to see
Lawson Loverings was crazy high.
Yeah, if you watch the Utah Valley game, it's incredible. And also, people like fouling him because he can't shoot free throws. So like,
yeah I know. Yeah.
Your most disappointing moment.
I mean, it was also Cal, but I'll find a different one. Now I have to go to the games I actually watched. That first Washington game kind of set – that loss to Washington set the tone for me for what conference play is going to be like.
Yeah. And the ASU loss, too. Yeah.
Huh?
The ASU game was brutal, too, because of how CU collapsed.
Yeah, I didn't see that one, though. I am mixing this up a little bit in my head with the previous Washington loss where their shitty guard with the big hair just caught fire and scored, like, 27 points. And it was, like, his career high by, like, double. But this one – no. I don't want to look at the –
Oh, I know exactly who you're talking about. I know exactly who you're talking about. Oh, what was his name? I want to say Oscar Tshiebwe, but I know it's not Oscar Tshiebwe.
No, it's something like that, though. But yeah, this game also was just – it was just – I don't even remember specifically. It was just obvious, like, we just can't really – score.
The team wasn't quite what we thought it was. Marcus Sahonis.
Yeah, thank you.
The team isn't quite what we thought it was. Yeah. There was a few of those moments this year. It was
Really shoot.
God, the shooting was so compared to last year. And it's the same people. Yeah. It's just crazy.
Like this stuff doesn't sound that bad, but like 18 turnovers, 5 of 17 on threes. 6 of 13 on free throws.
And that's just ugly basketball.
That stuff, yeah, it's just gross basketball. It's nothing really jumps out as being like, that's a horrible game. But that's kind of the point, is that it set the tone for that type of season, that type of game to be normal. Because we really sucked on threes.
So let's do what went wrong first, because I think that's a good transition. We could talk about threes as a whole, yeah, as a team. That's not, to me, what went wrong. This year was a disappointment because the guard play and wing play was either inconsistent or terrible for most of the year. And that's why you lose. Tristan Da Silva did his job. Lawson Lovering did his job, in my opinion, this year. You got a notable zero most games, I think, from the 2 and 3 spots, especially when Hadley went down. And KJ Simpson is just not the guy yet where he can put the rest of that on his back. He's just not that guy yet. We shouldn't want him to be that guy necessarily either, but that's just not who he is. He'll have nights where he goes off and destroys Texas A&M and Tennessee and just, you know, Cal? Run stuff in Catwall. Yeah.
The last 3 minutes when he started
trying. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but there's also nights where he's just not that guy. He just doesn't quite have that. And there was no one there to pick up the slack. So I think what went wrong this year to me is a lack of second option from the wing and guard spots. And there's a lot of dudes that did not deserve the minutes they were playing, in my, I guess, very frank opinion. And
yeah, I will say also that part of that is that you saw this really heavily with the USC game. That opposing defenses would just swarm KJ when he tried to run pretty much any offensive set.
Yep.
And if you can force the ball out of his hands quickly, those wings cannot do anything with that. Like,
exactly.
When you talk about momentarily,
what? You talked about quick decisions a moment earlier. That's to me what you're talking about. Just like, no one exactly could make one.
Yeah. You have that like split second 4-on-3 advantage on offense. If you can hit that shot, if you can attack, if you can make the next pass, great. If you kind of just pump fake, wait, sit around, it's just bad.
It's bad.
And it's bad. Again, like, turnovers were a problem because, again, we just don't play easy, clean basketball. KJ can't carry the team, like you said. It would help if he had another capable ball handler shooter to take pressure off of him. That would have been great.
Well, I mean, I don't know if dancing around is the right term, but let's just talk about the point that we're talking about. Nick Clifford went to Pac-12 Media Days. He was expected to be a guy on this team that he just wasn't. He showed flashes of being able to be a secondary ball handler last year. He showed flashes of being able to lead the break. He showed flashes of being able to attack from the wing. He shot 40% from three last year. Like, these are things, what you're just talking about, what we both just talked about is like very obvious hole on the wing that could have been filled from a guy who could take and make shots, run the secondary offense, move the guys in the right spot, hit that post entry to Tristan Da Silva so he doesn't have to go back to KJ and take advantage of the attention elsewhere. And he's just not. He just wasn't that guy. And it was very harmful, I think, to the season this year, because I think internally they expect him to be that guy.
There was more than a few games where he played like 2 minutes in the second half. Mm-hmm. Sometimes 0 minutes in the second half.
Including in the Pac-12 tournament.
Yeah, because he got out there and just something was wrong. Just like he has so many off nights for someone who's supposed to be a starter on a good team that it's just kind of hard to see how you move forward with him in that role. Like, I don't think you can.
And we can talk about when we look forward in the looking forward section, what we think might happen. But yeah, that is to me a lot of what went wrong this year. Looking forward,
not to blame him, because Ruffin was also hurt for a lot of the year. Gabadon was hurt almost all the year, and when he was playing, he wasn't really very good offensively. Ethan Wright turned it on at the end of the year, but he was mostly like he was a zero for almost all the entire season.
It is a coaching issue, regardless of whether or not you feel like, you know, however you feel about Clifford, it is a coaching issue. They did not recognize in time to save the season what needed to happen there. They just didn't. Yeah. They didn't do enough with him. They didn't do enough without it. That's a coaching thing. That's on Tad. Not the first time he's made that mistake. I'm sure it won't be the last time, but you hope he does it less and less. Let's talk about what went right this year. obviously some huge wins against Tennessee and A&M and other Pac-12 NCAA tournament teams, destroyed ASU on the road. Defense top 30, once again, I think that's what went right. Really good team defense, and from the team defensive leader, Lawson Lovering especially. CU now has a legit rim protector. I can't remember the last time I watched a Tad Boyle team that had like an actual, like, scared to go in there rim protector. I think the closest you got was Shane Harris Tunks, but like, come on, you know?
No.
Like Wesley Gordon for two games a year, maybe? Yeah. Like, it's.
I almost said something that would have been.
Josh Gott's one on one defense was very good. Lawson Lovering is not that guy. Lawson Lovering is a guy you can actively affect every drive because he's that active and that quick inside. And also, I'll be honest, everything we're talking about on the outside, I thought the guards did a pretty good cohesive job of limiting perimeter action most of the year. You know, there weren't any standout defenders, but I thought they were fine. Obviously,
yeah, more to your point.
Yeah.
I was thinking too, like watching the Utah Valley game. I mean, we were getting diced up, but like Lawson is the only plus defender, like theoretically, right?
Yeah. I think Gabadon is probably really good, especially mentally.
Okay. Sure, sure.
And Clifford has all the tools and the length. Yeah. End of list.
But I mean, like, yeah, we criticize Tad a lot for like the offense. And a lot of times, like, when we say like this is a gross offense, we're kind of beating around the bush. Like, he's not a good offensive coach, never has been.
No, that's the he's not.
It's like this team doesn't run easy offense because it doesn't know how to.
That's not true. Hold on. We run horns. Wait. We run horn set. We do the thing where the guards pass it three times in the perimeter, and then it's 10 seconds left, and we go, Clifford, make a drive. And then he chucks it against the backboard. That's good offense, dude.
I was thinking about the old zone offense of just passing around the perimeter until 2 seconds left and then airballing it.
Shane Gatling from deep. Yeah. Oh, man.
But schematically, like, how you take that group of players, and again, this is Lawson in addition to the scheme, and take, like, and have a top 30 defense in the country, I think that's fantastic. Like, it's, he has the buy-in from these players. And I was going to say my highlight of the season was the two UCLA games.
Yeah. Played them so close, man, which is very sad to say, but they're really good.
Yeah. And again, the UCLA on the road was a 14-point loss at the end. But we were right there for the last until 5 minutes left when everything snowballed. But like those rock fighty wins, is the identity of the program.
Right.
And that UCLA game at home was one of the worst games of basketball I've ever seen in my life. And I loved every second of it. And like that's how we upset teams. At home, that's how we kind of always have. We hopefully you have a good offensive player who can kind of carry the load.
Yeah.
And maybe that would have been different if Tristan didn't roll his ankle with 4 minutes left, but I think we probably would have lost anyway.
I also think we found some guys that have, and we can, this will be a nice transition to looking ahead, but yeah, grit. Like, I think Hadley and O'Brien, through pure desperation, became dudes that you want to see out there. Like, I trust O'Brien when he's out there now for, like, long stretches. I did not do that prior to this year, right? And, I think DeSilva actually showed some as well. We talk about his defense being a liability at times, and it totally is. But he hits and takes big shots all the time. And I think that's great. And that's a definition of grit too. KJ, we know, loves the moment. I don't know. I think there's some pieces there to look at and say, like you said, I don't think the mentality of this team is broken necessarily. I just think there needs to be a switch up with how assertive some spots are.
Yeah, I could even like the minutes breakdown in that home UCLA game. Was KJ 38 minutes, Luke O'Brien 36, and he was guarding Jaime Jaquez and doing a good job on him.
Yeah.
And then Tristan Lawson and then Ethan Wright played more than Neek because it turned out that was Ethan Wright's first good game. But no, I mean, I meant that in a good way. That was when his good finish to the season started, because like those were the guys who made the right things happen as a collective.
So we're losing Ethan Wright. We just talked about him. We're losing Ethan Wright. Let's go ahead and talk about everyone else is gone. The only two seniors are Ethan Wright and Jalen Gabadon, who both came in this year as grad transfers. So,
and they don't get a fifth year because they didn't play COVID because the Ivy League canceled their season.
Yeah, and the Ivy League did not grant them eligibility because they aren't technically on academic or athletic scholarships. They're on academic scholarships.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the Ivy League doesn't grant athletic scholarships. So, anyways, there's a whole thing there. So,
see, and that sucks because Princeton's in the Sweet 16. That would have been cool to see Ethan. I'm sure he's fucking psyched for his.
But Yale got bounced out of the NIT. Eat it, Yale. We beat you twice. so yeah, those are the two confirmed departures. The elephant in the room is that CU is bringing in three players as of right now. So obviously, someone else will be leaving as well, if not more than someone else. And that's
Cody Williams. Yep. Who we've talked about ad nauseum about.
Yes, current projected number one pick in 2024.
Literally the best recruit CU has ever had.
Yes, absolutely.
Asana Jop, who's a top 100 center recruit, or top 100 recruit who is a center from Denver. And he showed up to basically every CU home game at the season. And then who you mentioned earlier, Courtney Anderson, who was just the crazy athlete.
Yep.
Small forward who we hope to develop into a player, I guess.
Let's see. The other two guys we have not talked about once, RJ Smith, redshirted this year, 6'4 guard from Damien, California, with some interesting offers. And then also Joe Hurlbert, redshirted this year from Enderlin, North Dakota. He's a 6'10 power forward who had plenty of Big Ten offers. So they will be counted in as new players as well next year. So five new players slated right now, two departures, and let's just talk about it. I think we're both expecting more than one transfer out, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think anywhere from one to four, maybe even five out wouldn't really, like, shock me. It would be kind of, like, on an individual case, I could see up to like five players transferring for different reasons.
So I guess I'm gonna be a McCarthy guy and name names here. So
yeah, something we don't like to do, as you can see.
I don't think Quincy Allen is going to be on this team next year. I think he will find better opportunities elsewhere, and we will wish him luck and wish him well. I don't think Nick Clifford will probably be on the team next year. As a senior, he should want more minutes than he will likely receive next year. And I hope he does find those minutes. Dalen Kuhn's situation, who's been doing great in UNC. And then here's my surprise. I mean,
even a Jerron Hopkins situation.
Yeah.
He ends up being great for Fresno State.
Yeah. And here's one of my surprises. I don't know if Javon Ruff is going to play for CU again. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's one player I was thinking about. Is that for the medical reasons or for the
– Partly that, and I also think just Tad wants guys that can play through stuff, or, you know, it's not a huge knock. He's talked about toughness before on this team, and I think he's insinuated specifically with Ruffin that sometimes it's mental. And, you know, he says a lot that your best ability is your availability, right? So he loves that saying. I think he really likes Javon Ruffin, but I just don't know if that's a fit.
So I was agreeing with you literally until you said that Ruffin needs knee surgery.
And then you think that because of the surgery he's going to keep him around?
Well, no, if it's a surgery, it could be more serious than playing through it. Maybe it is.
I hope he can come back full, but three knee surgeries in 2 years freaks me out for sure. I'm sure Ruffin's also freaked out. So,
he's very injury prone. I think we can say it. Like, and that's a pretty big issue for being 19 years old. I say this as a very injury prone human being myself.
I mean, I hope he's okay. Yeah, I don't know. That's pretty much right.
I didn't tell you this, but I badly sprained my ankle 2 weeks ago doing a fucking layup, a practice layup with no one else in the gym.
Ouch.
I just landed and tore a bunch of stuff. Doing great. But yes, okay, so Javon Ruffin.
Well, and these are just guesses, just by what makes sense with roles that will be available next year and the players currently on the roster that could take them.
I do want him back. I think that even if he is like injured for most of the next season, whatever, I think we could kind of survive that loss for the time being and hope that he gets back and maybe give him another year at the program. Can he medical redshirt if he needs to? I mean, I guess it's not a
serious. Yeah, you can. You can always apply. I mean, Walton applied and got his waiver. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he already redshirted, though, Ruffin.
Right, so did Walton.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So I think that he's worth seeing how he recovers. And if they like him as a fit on the team, which I think he's a very, like,
I think he's a great fit.
Yeah.
Well, and talk about we need guys who could willingly take shots all day. Like, that's what that is, man.
And also do stuff off the dribble, which he's very skilled. I guess not skilled, but like,
yeah,
he's very smart. Can I give you an under the radar one?
Yes.
Wait, do you want the deep cut or the one that makes more sense?
Give me the deep cut.
This is going to be bad because I don't have any information. I've only heard from other people who might or might not have good information. But I guess Joe Hurlburt wouldn't be a surprise to folks in the know.
I guess I could kind of see that. We haven't seen him play, though. We have not seen him. It's hard for me to say anything, but
we haven't seen him. But the context is that Lawson is the starter for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Presumably. Asana Jop plays the same position as Hurlburt. Hurlburt is also, like, you're not going to run a Twin Towers lineup with him. Like, he's probably just not good enough to.
That we've heard suggest that he currently plays like a weird. Here's talking about deep cut. A weird, like, Jan Vesely.
I knew you were going to do that. I saw it in your face that you were going to mention him.
Small forward guy. So yeah, definitely not that. And Jop's gonna take minutes next year. I think we all think he's gonna play.
And
so
if the Jan Vasily comp makes sense to you, I'm sorry that you had to watch those Wizards team.
Never forget, just complete tongue kissing his girlfriend on draft night.
Who did you say? I wasn't even paying attention. Who did you say was going to take his minutes?
It's on a job.
Oh, yeah. But also, I also heard that he apparently is not really showing that well in practice.
Mm.
And I feel like maybe I shouldn't even say that because it's kind of...
Well, we don't know. We just don't know.
It's disingenuous of me to mention that. But that's what I've heard.
Yeah, we just don't know. So... I don't know. The obvious thing is Cody Williams is a one-year opportunity, and that's what everyone's thinking about, right? Is that he is the greatest recruit he's ever had on paper. He will be here 1 year because of that. CU needs to try to do what they can to make that work. If CU ends up having more than one transfer, so there is extra room, I would love to see them bring in, please God, anyone else that can make a decision with the ball on the perimeter.
I have another
example.
Can I do my other transfer guess?
Yeah.
Julian Hammond.
I could see that. After what he showed as a starter, knowing that he's going to have even less opportunities as a point guard next year, potentially.
Yeah. As a starter, okay, this is going to be... Okay, so per 36 minutes. 15 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, and then 47% on threes. And then 50% on field goals. That's Hammond as a starter. So he just he plays very well. As a reserve per 36 minutes, it's like 11 points, 3 assists, and then 30% on threes, 36% on field goals, and he just feels like a different player. He just doesn't really show up off the bench. I don't know why. We've talked about this before. And it's just a pattern that happens. I don't get it. I think we talked about it last time. Like, if you are the sixth man, the offense should flow through you in a way where you get to run the show like you would as a starter. I don't get why he just doesn't play as well. Also, I was going to mention that with like the KJ Simpson needing help stuff, like Hammond wasn't very good off the ball next to KJ. Like, yeah. He kind of needs the ball to be a good player. And if you have KJ and Cody playing together, one of those guys should be on the floor at all times. Like, yep. Those are your two guards.
Yep.
So I don't really see what his role would be. And I think he has earned a chance, probably in a Power 5 team, to run an offense as a starter.
He impressed me down the stretch, except for Utah Valley, but there was some, I don't know, there might have been some other stuff there. So I can totally see that. And in that case, definitely CU needs to backfill with guards that just take shots. Trey Woodbury. Someone that can also drive from that spot, it would be great, but Williams will be doing a lot of that too. I don't know. It'll be interesting. I think CU will be better next year. Of course, but I said that, I guess, before last year as well. So don't take it from me. And hope KJ can obviously come back full strength, though it sounds like it was pretty precautionary near the end there. And that team's going to have firepower. So.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Like, he had season ending mono, which is the Andre Robertson classic.
Yep.
That's kind of strange, but
yeah,
whatever. It happens.
Better
than a third knee surgery. Yeah.
So let's switch over to the women's team.
I'm not done.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so we have four projected starters, like four players who should be starting, right? So you have KJ, Cody, yep. Tristan, Lawson.
Yeah.
And then the fifth starter, if things come back, is either Luke O'Brien or Javon Hadley. I think we both would prefer Luke O'Brien.
I prefer a transfer.
Okay, yes, I was going to say this. But if we get our way, we get a transfer in. What kind of – oh, shit, okay. What kind of transfer do you want? Do you want a guard? Do you want a wing? Yes. Do you want a point guard?
No, I want a guard. I want a larger-bodied guard that will defend the other team's best play. I want Eli Parquet, basically. I want a larger-bodied guard that will defend the other team's best player and be able to take three dribbles from a pump fake and also shoot like 38% from three at high usage.
So junior year Parquet.
Sure.
So I was just thinking earlier today about how much I miss junior year Parquet.
I mean, I tell you who's perfect. Carlin Brown. I want like a Carlin Brown dude on this team. That would be sweet. Give me a Carlin Brown shot taker.
Okay. Do you think we can like realistically – What's our poll?
Transfer gloves are off, so now everyone's available thanks to Coach Prime. So, like, I would expect Tad to go hard after people now because Tad's already been pretty good at using transfer portal and getting recruits from there. Guards know he puts guys in the NBA, which helps. I don't think CU will be able to bid for, like, some of the highest level, but they'll be able to get some good players.
Okay, and then if we got a second transfer, what would your preference be? I want a pure wing.
Yes, I don't think we need any more like bigs. I would want a wing, like a Quincy Guerrier guy.
I don't like Quincy Guerrier, but
neither do I. But that's like pure wing. He's big muscle guy. Trayshawn Fletcher, maybe. How about that?
I like that. And like someone who will push for minutes, but maybe not get them. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll do this again as we get deeper in the offseason and we see some of these roster moves taking shape. But disappointing season.
Yeah.
For one basketball team, but the other still playing. The CU women's team has now won more NCAA tournament games in the last 10 years than they have ever before. Not ever before. What am I trying to say? They've won more this season than they have in the last 10 years. That's what I'm trying to say.
They've made their first Sweet 16 in the last 20 years.
Thank you. That's more what I was trying to say. J.R. Payne went to the tournament the past 2 years in a row now, and this year definitely had a chance if they got the right matchups, and I think they got the right matchups. So, I think Monday night, CU played Duke in Durham in the NCAA tournament game. CU was the 6 seed. Duke was the 3 seed. And I watched a little bit of it, but Sam, I believe you watched all of it. Give us the give us the recap of what happened.
Okay. So CU women.
Yes.
They jumped out to a 15-2 lead.
They've been starting fast beginning. All month.
Uh-huh. I think it's because their physicality just catches teams off guard.
And Frieda Foreman just like lets it fly all the time.
That was mid-10. Frieda Foreman scored 21 points. This game she was a bit off, but Quay Miller, we talked about before the tournament, she had a cold stretch to end the season. She scored she had 17 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists in this one.
Huge.
Fantastic game.
Huge.
And she scored 9 points in the first 5 minutes to start the game. So, yeah, great lead early on. Duke started to climb back into it. Some of their players kind of settled in against that pressure, hit some shots, and then they started ramping up their own pressure because kind of similar to CU, they like to press and force turnovers. And then once they started getting those going, CU kind of was a little shocked, I guess. But eventually, like, CU did settle in again. They were only trailing for a few minutes. Then Frieda Foreman hit a good shot to take back the lead. And eventually, closing time, Jalen Sherrod does what Jalen Sherrod does, and that is score clutch buckets.
Yep.
Missed which free throws. Yep. And she missed. So she scored. They were down 60-56 with a minute and a half left. Ended up going to overtime, tied 50-50.
60-60, and because Sherrod
incredible,
it was 50, and
won. It was 50-46.
Is that what it was? Yeah. Okay.
It was 50-46, and then it went to overtime 50-50 because Sherrod is so fucking fast. Like, I can't even – she might be the fastest in college basketball. She just got in, got bumped, hit the layup, missed the free throw. Did you watch the Stanford home game?
I did.
That was heartbreaking.
Yep.
Because she played so well.
Yep.
And then the one free throw. Or I guess she missed two. But this one, it turned out okay. In overtime, CU clamped the fuck down.
Yep.
Duke didn't make a single basket. It was just free throws for them.
Yep.
And it was CU's game to win.
I thought Vonleh played really well down the stretch inside too. I was not realizing how much the high post offense runs through her sometimes. Like, she does a lot to determine who gets the ball. In this game, they give her the ball a bunch in the high post and made her decide, like, are you going to give it to the handoff person? Are you going to make a pass? And I don't know.
Yeah, thanks for being more analytical than the little recap. Also, like, the offense did kind of figure stuff out once they started getting Vonleh the ball.
Yeah.
In the post, because that kind of stabilized things. And she was the leading scorer in, like, the fourth quarter overtime, I think.
Yeah, let me back up. Celeste Miller, weird ass stat line for Duke.
Wait, 8 points. It's Celeste Taylor, by the way. I was going to highlight this also.
So close. 8 points. What was it? 10 boards. 8 assists, 10 steals, right?
Yeah.
It's
almost a quadruple double.
Yeah. In the weirdest way to not get a quadruple double. Their offense looked gross on the stretch, but that's what CU does to people. They make their offense look gross. So, like that kind of made sense. Kendall Weta, once again, doing her job. And Quay Miller having a huge breakout game. CU has two big bigs inside that can handle a little bit, which I feel like is really rare. I don't know if it is. I feel like it is. I don't know. How many other teams have that? Sherrod like is literally a zero shooting. Which no, I well,
she had some shots.
Did you hear what she said after the game?
What?
Against Middle Tennessee, because they played that one in Durham as well, and you know, CU popped off from three that game, and someone asked her about it. She said, "Yeah, well, it's a shooter's gym, I've heard, but for someone like me, there's no such thing as a shooter's gym." But I'm glad the rest of our team. I was like, "Oh my god,
she's funny."
Yeah, well, she said after this game, someone asked her what made her choose Colorado, and she said that was the only Power Five offer I had. What choice did I have? And I was like, "Oh my god." Yeah, she's great. Yeah. But they are now playing the opposite of Duke in the next game here. The highest seed left in their bracket.
She actually she made a three against Middle Tennessee, so maybe it was a shooter's gym.
There you go.
But yeah, that game, I adore this CU team. I have nothing else to say. They're actually good. That's the thing.
Yes, they are actually very good. And they weren't
cohesive.
Yeah.
They also have their identity of just fucking shit up.
Yeah.
And just getting that's how they beat these talented teams, is they just rock fight them.
Super havoc
with experience. Yeah. And again, the endurance too to play that hard and then to come out on top at the very end.
It's a fun brand of basketball to watch, except for when you're watching them turn the ball over like a million times because they just
have
to complete half-court passes. But
my favorite thing they do too is the guards like to get downhill and then they get to the baseline, and if they can't cut along the baseline, they just run out of bounds with the ball. It's it's incredible.
Yeah, Foreman is so huge, just the way she moves out without the ball in order to get open. She relocates all the time. It's great.
She has the quickest trigger, too. Yes. Oh, my God.
She knows she has the greenest of lights because they need scoring. So she's just like, yeah, every shot's good.
And she makes them.
Yes, yes. They play Iowa next. Iowa has one of the most famous women's players in the last few years, probably. Caitlin Clark, incredible scorer.
Probably the best women's player since Breonna Stewart. Maybe better.
No. Or
maybe, probably not. No, she can't be better, actually. No. Sorry. I got a little... Maybe she might be a better all-around as a scorer and a passer. She had 22 points and 14 assists last game.
Yes.
She's averaging 27 points, 8.5 assists, 7 rebounds. Shooting, near 40% on three. Yeah. She's just elite.
Kind of like Kelsey Plum-ish, I think. No, I think like Kelsey Plum. No.
Yeah. Kelsey Plum is more. I don't know how to just. Caitlin Clark is big too. She's 6 foot.
Yeah.
Kelsey Plum is still. She's a little small.
I meant more just in terms of total impact. I feel like. Like, see, he's played against Kelsey Plum before. I don't know. So, regardless, you're going to, in my opinion, the way you do this is you're going to have to let her get hers, right? And the way you win is you make sure that no one else gets theirs and she can score 40 as long as they score 50. Maybe possible the way that CU plays team defense. I don't know. I don't think Iowa's bigs can match up that well defensively with CU's bigs. Quay Miller's going to need to have a huge game here. Iowa has a lot of shooters though. Like they are going to try to shoot the hell out of the ball. I don't know. I think CU's longer though. I think CU's longer than Iowa is.
Sorry, I'm looking at Kelsey Plum's senior year stat log.
Yeah, she's really, really good.
Disgusting.
Yeah, she's really good.
She 57 points against Utah. 44 on 7 of 8 threes. Oh my god, she's so good. Sorry, I wasn't listening to a word you were saying. I was just thinking. I'm also an Aces fan, so I get to watch her as much.
I don't think Iowa's as long as CU is as a team. I think they have better shooters, but I don't know.
Yeah. I literally don't know anyone else on Iowa besides her.
Well, I think the defensive game plan is to make sure you keep it that way, right? Just make sure that she takes every shot and make those shots hard.
Let me look up.
I will say this. I think it is an advantage. I don't think it's a huge advantage. I do think it's an advantage that CU's next game, they go back for a week of classes. They have spring break the next week after this. And they're playing this in Seattle. So CU's played in Seattle before all the time. CU's use of the flight from Seattle, the traveling less than Iowa is, not by much, but it is a lot smaller. Like, I feel like that familiarity helps, and the fact they don't have class the next week allows them to do, I don't know, it feels like it's just easier for them to make this trip, so we'll see.
Yeah, it looks like they are pretty big, Iowa.
All I think they're big. I don't know if they're that, like, I just feel like CU as a team, their calling card is how fast everyone is, even if they're big. Like,
yeah.
I just don't know. I think UCLA can match up with that. Stanford, obviously, but they're out. I just don't know how Big Ten.
Yeah, I don't know how Stanford lost.
I don't know how Big Ten women's basketball plays. If it's like Big Ten men basketball, then they're going to be tall. But do they, like, I don't know, are they laterally quick? I don't know.
Let me think. So I'm looking at their Creighton box score last year. So CU did have the common opponent. They lost to Creighton, and then Creighton beat Iowa.
And Iowa's team this year is not has had terrible, like, they've gotten dunked on this year a few times.
Yeah. I don't know.
Lost to Indiana, well, who just lost to Miami.
It also appears that Iowa
30.
Ew. Iowa has two players who shoot the ball.
Yeah.
That would be Clark and then Monica Zanano, who is their center.
Yeah. NC State is, beat them as an unranked team by 13.
How do you score 62 points with 5 turnovers only?
Gotta be this such a gross. Slow game.
Ugh.
So, they're pretty battle-tested. The Big Ten is a pretty good women's basketball conference. So is CU. It'll be a fun game, and I'm excited we get to watch it. If somehow CU pulls off an Elite Eight in this run, that's an all-time season in both basketball programs. So
yeah, they did it in 2002.
Yeah, well, Seal Berry is a legend for a reason, right?
Yeah, I was going to ask. Kate Fagan was the lead guard of those teams.
She came and she spoke. Was
there. Yeah, she was there in Durham to talk to them.
And Shelly Sheets. Another fun little fact before we get off this topic. Shelly Sheets saved Jalen Sherrod, who was mistakenly given a foul as a foul out with like 5 minutes left in the game.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and Shelly Sheets just went over and like yelled at the video, like the refing crew, saying, no, she wasn't even anywhere near the play. How can you foul her out? And they went back and reviewed and gave the foul to someone else, kept Sherrod in the game.
Oh, good.
Shelly Sheets is a legend.
Yeah, still saving us.
I think that's all I had. I mean, continue to watch this team. They're really fun. They play fast, aggressive ball, and they all care a lot. I don't know.
I will say, like, this team, the players, they adore each other. You can just see it in the way they play.
Yeah.
It's just – I like
and,
when
– And hope to God Sherrod comes teams. Back next year.
I think she will. I don't – she has another year if she wants it. Also, she wasn't honored at Senior Day. I should mention that.
That actually huge.
I think that this is true. I'm not sure. Her and Quay were not honored, even though they were seniors. They only honored Tay Jones.
That would be huge for next year.
Also, Tay Jones, she's going to be the one guarding Caitlin Clark. So she's definitely the worst offensive player in the rotation. But you hope that she can hit a couple threes, which she does time to time, and because she'll probably have to play a little bit more minutes, guarding Clark.
Anything else? Any updates? To football notes.
No, just send us home.
Okay,
we gotta wrap soon.
Spring practice starting. Spring practice has started. 2 days in. Videos are out. Watch these videos. You're insane. Please watch these videos. They're very fun. It's hard not to get excited about the just difference in – it's one of those moments. We've had a lot of these moments where I was watching a YouTube video of a spring practice posted by my head coach's son, which was – everything about that is hilarious to me. And I was watching this former 1-11 team. I was watching Shedeur Sanders throw a pass to Travis Hunter. And I realized that there was 300,000 views on the video. And I was like – oh, so we're just that different. So everything's just different now. We literally just changed everything. It was one of those moments. It's really cool, man. I would watch these. Sanders is looking like you want a quarterback to look. And obviously Travis Hunter practicing mostly on offense right now might be news to some. He will definitely play a lot of receiver next year. So continue to watch these. My favorite new moment has been how angry of a man Sal Sunseri is at defensive line coach. If you were to cast a defensive line coach in like the longest yard, he is who you would cast. It is. If you watch the video, they do not like, he's mean. Like he's doing what you want a defensive line coach to do, I guess. There's a moment in the first practice video where it's offensive line, it's defensive line, and it's just reps on reps, right? So it's like defensive end trying to get to the quarterback, offensive line trying to stop him. And this interior defensive lineman has this incredible rip move where he gets to the quarterback in like half a second, right? And Sal Sunseri goes like, "Oh yeah, it's a good move for as slow of an asshole you are." And you're just like, "Oh my god, he literally just did like exactly what you wanted to do." And it, you know, whatever. Anyways, they're fun. It's fun to see the personalities and get excited because they, I don't know, it's a new era and Sam's not taking advantage.
I CU football has beat me down to the point.
Look, man, this is literally the most different you could possibly be, though.
No, like, I know. I think the big difference here, actually, is that I don't really like the sport of football that much. I think that's our issue. Fundamental issue.
Yeah, that would do it. They're not playing the sport of football, if that makes you want to watch it more.
Because they're practicing. Like, I don't know if people can tell this about you, but you fucking love the sport. Like, it just shows. You want to analyze. You want to see how all these blocking schemes are. You want to see how the H-back is used in this guy's offense. I don't know how you follow it. And I learned so much about football just from you. And I appreciate that you see it differently than me.
I think I love the sport of CU football, and I will do anything possible to get closer to that. But that's not true. So, anyways, watch the videos; they're super fun, I just, you know, it's fun to see that full look into practice. No other program gets what we get, so I would like to take advantage of that. We get 12 minutes of uncut, like I shouldn't say uncut, but pretty raw highlights every day, and like. I don't know. We get to watch Tim Brewster like cuss his ass off on videos when he's talking about the tight end losing a one-on-one rep. Fun stuff. And the team just looks different, man. Like I said, hard to feel not excited, Sam, when you're watching the best quarterback recruit we've had in the last 25 years pass to the literal best recruit ever. Oh my God, is this late breaking news?
What?
Lawson Loughran just entered the transfer portal.
Fuck.
That sucks.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
That really, really sucks.
Oh, shit.
Maybe that's making room for Grant, that Wyoming guy. But no, it's not. It's just awful, probably. Oh, wow. Have fun going to bed on that, Sam.
Should we talk about that?
That's really hard to do at the end of this. This might.
I guess we're gonna be looking for. Damn!
Oh god, that's awful.
Bad beat.
He's so good at defense, dude. Wow, live.
So we're going to be recruiting a center now. That's my contribution to this.
Yeah, let's not do this. Let's not try to do this.
Okay, let it sit. He could still come back. Probably not.
Yeah, maybe. But no, he won't. That's awful. Wow. Okay, well, we're going to end on that. Cool. See ya.
See ya.